Melissa Crespo, director, is a multi-hyphenate theater maker based in NYC. As a director, she has made a career of developing new plays, musicals, and opera around the country and abroad. Favorite credits include Bees and Honey by Guadalice del Carmen, MCC Theater, Espejos Clean by Christine Quintana, Hartford Stage and Syracuse Stage, and Form of a Girl Unknown by Charlie Evan Simpson, Salt Lake Acting Company. As a playwright, her play Egress, co-written with Sarah Saltwick, had a world premiere at Amphibian Stage and won the Roe Green Award for Outstanding Achievement in Playwriting at Cleveland Playhouse. As a producer, she is one of the founding editors of Three Views on Theater, an online publication conceived by the Lilies. Fellowships and residencies include Time Warner Fellow, WP Theater, Usual Suspect, New York Theater Workshop, The Director's Project, Drama League, Van Leer Directing Fellow, Second Stage Theater, and the Alan Lee Hughes Directing Fellow, Arena Stage. Melissa received her MFA in directing from the New School for Drama, and she is currently the Associate Artistic Director of Syracuse Stage. Find out more at melissacrespo.com. Andrew David Sotomayor, Music Director. Recent credits: Sound of Music, Tootsie, Ogunquit Playhouse, Rent, Broadway at Music Circus, Sweet Charity, Maltz Jupiter Theater, On Your Feet, Some Enchanted Evening, Paper Mill Playhouse, First National Tours, Tootsie, Escape to Margaritaville, Off-Broadway, Curvy Widow, Premiere, Regional, Man of La Mancha, Westport Country Playhouse, Disney's Newsies, West Side Story, Maltz Jupiter Theater, The Will Rogers Follies, Merry-Go-Round Playhouse, Cut Man, a boxing musical, Goodspeed. As a composer, Andrew has provided music and lyrics for the original musicals 50 Shades of Boop Up and Committed, as well as the score for the audiobook The Influential Voice. He is a proud graduate of Stetson University, Florida. Endless love and gratitude to his wonderful husband, Bart. For more, visit soto.fun. Hello, dear listeners. Just a quick note before we dive into this very exciting episode. Tara and I discovered at the end of the interview that El Otro Oz has been extended through March 3rd, 2024. So you definitely have a few more weeks to go on out, get your tickets, go see this incredible production. You can find links to get tickets in the show notes.
Listeners, hey everyone. So excited to be coming out of our winter hibernation for a moment. Usually MK and I, hey MK, are on our winter break at this moment, but we had to come out of it because we had Oz happening in our very own backyard and a production of El Otro Oz, which is just so exciting. And we have our first Oz directing team on the pod today of what the New York Times has described as a tender reimagining of The Wizard of Oz that follows Dora, an angsty American teenager who is more an admirer of Beyonce than merengue, and initially rejects her family's Mexican heritage as her familia prepares for her quinceañera. So this is very, very exciting. This is one of the first productions that has made Oz bilingual. So please welcome to our podcast, Melissa and Andrew, who also goes by Soto. I may start calling you that in this episode. Welcome, my friends. So happy to have you.
Hello.
Hi, happy to be here.
Yay. Okay. Before we dive on in, can you give us little tastes of your multi-hyphenate, multi-passionate rainbows and perhaps what you are currently walking through or toward on your very own yellow brick road? We're starting so deep. Cute. Let's go. So,
I'm a director. Sometimes I'm a playwright, but mostly a director.
Cool.
I'm also the associate artistic director of Syracuse Stage. So producing is a thing every day. And I've been doing this thing all my life. Still doing it. Don't see myself stopping anytime soon. And I'm based in New York City.
Awesome. Thanks, Marissa.
Yeah.
Soto?
I'm a music director and songwriter and all-around music man. I play piano for people most times. And I've been doing that for a very, very long time. It's the longest relationship I've ever been in, for sure. To varying degrees of success. Yeah.
LTR. I love it. I'm here for it.
Why not?
That's awesome. Well, I know our listeners and myself, I would love to hear about your Oz DNA. So how did Oz show up in your childhood? Were you a fan? Did you watch the movie, read the books? Were you ever in a production of The Wizard of Oz as a child? Please share.
Oh, I watched the movie over and over again as a kid. Mm-hmm. I had the VHS and it was something that I just always watched over and over and over and over and over again. And still do. But yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, I never read the book, actually. That's an interesting thing. But and I've always been a huge Judy Garland fan. So yeah. And I was in dance at a young age, so I loved the dancing in the movie too. So, yeah.
Awesome.
I grew up in Florida, and my Titi Gladys still lived in New York, and so she would come down and she would get a condo for the summer, and so my mom would like leave me at the condo with my cousins, and my cousin Angela loved the original movie, and she introduced me to that. I remember that vividly.
Come on, Angela.
Oh, yeah. Angela's great. And she's like, oh, it's so good. You haven't seen it. So she put it on. And that was my first introduction. Although, got to give a shout out to like the spinoffs and the lesser appreciated Disney's Return to Oz with Firouza Balk.
Thank you.
Love that movie. So terrifying. Also, Muppet Oz with Ashanti. Amazing.
There it is.
Ooh, I got to watch that.
Nobody ever talks about it. The songs are great. It's got Queen Latifah. It's got David Allen Greer. It's amazing movie.
Wildly
it's pretty
random.
Scary, but it's really good.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's The Wiz, and I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan. And,
oh, my God,
Yeah, The Scarecrow. We do have a little moonwalking.
I caught it. Oh, oh, no. Gets everything he wants. I was like, come on. Actually, that moment really touched me. That was one of my favorite moments.
Nice.
The Scarecrow having his big realization was so sweet. Awesome.
I love that. Thank you so much for walking us back down your yellow brick road. So I'm so excited to see the production. I'm actually taking my goddaughter, who just turned 8. And she fell in love with the world of Oz. So did her siblings. And it's so amazing to see how new generations just keep falling in love with the MGM movie, but all these other interpretations that everyone keeps creating. So I'm curious what you think it is about Oz specifically that makes artists and theater artists want to keep reinterpreting it for new generations.
I think it has to do with finding your truth. And Brian Quijada has a beautiful version that he's done called Somewhere Over the Border.
Yes, we've had him on. We love him.
Yeah. And Syracuse Stage, we produced the world premiere 2 years ago. And he, you know, that's a love letter to his mom and how she came across the border from El Salvador. And you know, every time I see a Wizard of Oz, especially in our production, I find it's about when you're lost, Oz is how you get back and recenter yourself and find some kind of peace, some kind of truth, some kind of acceptance. I think that's also why The Wizard of Oz and Judy Garland and Rainbows and the queer community also gravitate toward the Wizard of Oz. I I recently went to Vegas for the first time for my 40th birthday and went to Señor Frog's and saw the drag brunch, but when it was with a lot of the queens from Drag Race, and they did a Wizard of Oz mini little musical, and it was amazing. And and you know, there was and that also rang true, even, you know, getting drunk with brunch and drag queens, you know, like
many ways to take in your eyes.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, and finding your way over the rainbow and how hard that can be, and you know, and everyone's pot of gold is different. So that's how I see the story and why it keeps coming up in our culture. And so and no matter where you come from, you know, everybody joins together with that story.
Love it.
Agreed.
I love it. I always love the part that, and it's kind of like people get frustrated by it, but that the culminating theme is always like, you already had what you needed this whole time. And it's you. And you've always had it. And it's always been you. I always love that about that. Mad TV did a great sketch about it where they're like, what? Like, but it's a beautiful theme.
Why shouldn't you tell me
Why
that?
Why couldn't you tell me?
Yeah, after all of this, it's me, whatever. But no, it's always touched me. Like, you know, everything you've needed, you've had with you the whole time. You had to go on a journey to remember that. And that's cool.
Yeah.
Like most of us do, I think, you know, especially when there's something that we're fearful or scared of or haven't claimed yet for ourselves, which is so beautifully done in your show. Before we get into your involvement with this specific production happening at the Atlantic Theater Company, can you speak on to the translation even just of the title? Because Wizard of Oz usually is translated as El Mago de Oz for the Spanish translation, but this is El Otro Oz, meaning the other Oz. I was so like curious about that choice, if you have anything to offer there.
I have no idea.
It's an interesting choice. I was like, the other Oz. Like the other dimension, like what does that mean?
I thought about it. I don't know what the writers intended, but it's another Oz, and it's so full of Latinidad. Like it's got the adaptation is so clever in how it's taken all of the characters, the storylines, the references, and turn them so that the diaspora can really connect no matter what part of Latin America you come from, which is pretty cool because we're often thought of as a monolith, but we're not. You know, we're so different, you know, depending on where we come from or if you were born here or not, or if you speak Spanish or not. And it's just, yeah, I think it's just another version of the story, but I don't know what the writers
said. Like no, that makes sense. Like another version. And it sounds so good. I love how it rings. El Otro Oz. It has like such a beautiful ring to it too. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Well, that's how I rationalize the title too, is that like, this is definitely the Latin version, but there's so many different, it's a world where all of the Latin cultures have prominence. Right. Mm-hmm. And are celebrated in their own way. Even the villain has her own Latin identity celebrated. And it's very cool with her magic castanets. They're also really fierce too. So like it's like a whole thing.
I think the witch should only have castanets now. Like screw the broom.
I know.
Right. The broom can go away. I like the sound too, like the like snaky sound it gives too in her, like the pipe.
Right?
Yeah, like energy she gets. It's really, really cool. Okay, so how did you both get introduced to this piece and get involved with Atlantic Theater Company on bringing this production to life for kids specifically?
For years, Allison Beattie, the artistic director of Atlantic for Kids, had been trying to get me to direct for her. And my schedule never worked out. And then finally, everything, you know, the dots connected as they do. And I read the piece when she sent it to me last summer. And I was blown away by it. And I an enthusiastic yes to do it. And then I was talking with a friend who is a brilliant actor, choreographer, musician, producer, and asking him for recommendations for a music director. And he recommended Soto and felt like I've known him my whole life when we first spoke. And here we are. And we had a blast. So yeah, that's how it came to be. And I think, you know, timing is everything. Timing. I'm so glad my time to work with Atlantic was with this show at this time with Soto and the team. And it was great.
It was wild for me too, because back, I think 2021, I don't remember when they did the In the Works out in the woods for this piece, but I was supposed to be out there working on two cabarets. And then they had asked me, they're like, oh, well, there's this El Otro Oz piece that we're workshopping out here. We want to introduce you to Jaime, and they'll work around your schedule. So you'll come out here and do these two cabarets and work on this. I was excited. I had read the script and everything. This was back in 2021. And then I got a national tour, and it was COVID, and I hadn't worked in 2 years. And I was like, I have to take this tour. I'm so sorry. I won't be able to do any of this work with you. So, when Melissa reached out to me about this, it was like, I was like, oh, this piece is coming back to me. And I was really excited about it. What are the odds that it would come back across my desk? They so rarely do. So it was,
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? Oh yeah. No, this piece came across my desk way before we even spoke. So when you approached me, I was just like, oh, well, that's the universe giving this back to me. Cause I was super excited about it. And then I couldn't do it. Cause money, girl. Like, you know what I mean? I hadn't worked in 2 years. I had to go.
Yeah, girl. That's money, girl.
Yeah. That's usually most reasons for decisions.
Yes. So I'm so happy the timing worked out for me this time, because what a joyous experience I got to have. It was really cool.
Oh, that's the magic of Oz. It was kismet bringing it together. That's really cool. Can you talk us through a bit of the creative process of bringing this specific production to life, collaborating with all the artists that you're working with, especially bringing your vision to life with the actual design concept? What were like the essential pieces that you wanted to bring into this production?
So I love to be silly. I just, you know, theater's a hard business. You know, a lot of us are out here, speaking of money, you know, hustling in these streets, and you know, a lot of us have a lot of different jobs, and you know, because we just have to survive. And so you know, I find my joy in theater, the script really just really sang off the page for me. It just felt so fun and reverent, and you know, it's a kid's show, but I also, as an adult, I really, really found a lot of joy and humor in it, and so I really leaned into that. I mean, I mean, Soto knows me. I'm a goofball, but I went to see the Beyonce in concert this summer. This was a big year of concerts and just like getting out back into the world. And you know, the Renaissance tour and that album with all the silver and the glitter and you know, her really leaning into queer culture and disco and, you know, all of that. The Wizard in El Otro Oz really just felt like Beyonce to me. And she felt like if Beyonce were a Kardashian, if the Kardashians are trying to be Beyonce, which some could say they do. But I thought that the Wizard and Club EC, as it's called in our show, Club Emerald City, would be the Beyonce, you know, Renaissance concert. And so on the set, Rodrigo Escalante, our scenic designer, who I love, when I told him that, he was like, yes. And then so that we have a giant Mylar fringe curtain that's covering the set. And I said, hey, when we go to Oz and the characters are singing, "Oh, look at the skyline of Club Emerald City. Disco balls come from the ceiling," because, you know, Beyonce, disco balls. And so I just was, you know, every reference I wanted to get as specific in as possible, and in terms of like pop, because I love pop culture, and I feel like pop culture, you know, we're surrounded by it at all times through like social media and television, and you know, and then when you go to the theater, and I feel like we need to feel like theater is for us, and it can be seen as like an elitist art form, and I think if theater is going to survive and stay alive, because it's really expensive to make theater now, and it's a whole production in itself. You know, you have to spend the money, and then you have to leave your house, and then you have to go. And so I want people to go to the theater and feel like, oh, this is awesome. And I feel, you know, and connect with it. And so even if you're bringing your kid, because as an adult, I want the adults also to have a fun time. That was, I kept saying that in rehearsal. I thought, you know, we gotta give the adults something too. And so, so everybody joined in, the whole room, Soto with the music, Alessandra, our choreographer, with the choreo, the actors, you know, and the actors are all 20 somethings, and just, you know, this, that energy that they have as you know, young actors. You know, I told them all of this on day one, and everybody just immediately leaned in, and we all had a really fun time putting it together. So that's a very short version of how the creation of all of it kind of came together and why you see what you see on stage.
This adult had a great time. I also could not stop chuckling over the bodyguard costume for the Emerald City. It was so perfect, and she was excellent. The actress who doubled as many roles, she was phenomenal as the bodyguard. That's one of
Christian,
my favorite parts. Yes, so
Christian's
good.
Amazing.
So good.
Yeah, and so for anyone who doesn't know, there's a bouncer, and that's the character yes. name in the script is Bouncer.
Bouncer.
And originally the costume designer thought, oh, we'll put her in a green suit. And I was like, she's a bouncer. She needs muscles and a t-shirt that says security and sunglasses. Yes. And so the minute and tattoos, like, you know, like I think about those like beefcakes, like who stand in front of clubs and are like, her.
Yes.
But, you know, she's this like tiny girl, you know, who's playing the part.
Perfect.
And so, and I'm always looking for a laugh. And, you know, but an earned laugh, not like, you know, gratuitous. So, and the minute I showed Christian the costume, she ate it up, and she's so funny. And the script and the music, we've been joking that the music in the, in that number where the wizard performs, it's like very Cher, very Donna Summer. And so, yeah, I, you know, that's why I was like, if she's Beyonce or one of those divas, she needs a fan. And so we got a wig and you know, that silly crap is, you know, I was just having fun myself.
I
just,
you know.
Oh, it's great. It's so exciting. What I loved about that number is that was when we really like started flexing, because everyone plays different things, and we had talked early on about like, well, then that means as actors, like you can embrace different sort of characteristics in the singing and find different things. And so then watching the actors go through the process of finding what their voices was, what the Theo's voices were versus what the birds for Carnival Glory was, and finding what that is. And Ariel was so great about finding this Cher sort of Britney, like what that texture to the voice is. It's so funny in the moment too. It's so beautiful.
I totally got like Shakira at the Super Bowl. Like that's what I felt.
one of the most beloved Super Bowl performances.
A thousand
Shakira and J-Lo. Oh. It's incredible.
Should be happening again this year. I wish it was. It's the same team.
They'll
like,
make an
year.
Appearance.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, I think they did the last Chiefs 49ers.
You never know.
Hey, listeners, do you ever wish you had maps of your favorite storylands to hang up in your home?
If you are nodding, may we direct your attention to Elizabeth Wade Studio, who paints watercolor story maps of our favorite classic books, retracing the steps of iconic literary heroines from the March Sisters to Mary Lennox and more, including, of course, our girl Dorothy and her journey over the rainbow.
Elizabeth invites you to remember, dream, and momentarily step into the shoes of those favorite literary characters, both in fantasy realms and in their everyday homes.
Through her art available in prints, postcards, tea towels, and even stickers, Elizabeth continues to capture the magic of stories and the beauty of the world around us, reminding us that every place has a story and every story has a place, perhaps even on your walls.
Visit ElizabethWadeStudio.com for more stories and find her on Instagram and Facebook at Elizabeth Wade Studio.
I love this. I love the Beyoncé Renaissance infusion into Oz. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. What specifically was it like putting this production in a black box theater and using the space? Was there anything specific that you had to work with, or something that made it even more fun to work in that space?
Yeah, well, the beauty of this production for Atlantic is usually in the past, the shows are on top of another show. So the Atlantic for kids shows live on another set. And because of that, the cast and the crew have to set up and break down every night. And it's kind of limiting, you know? And so we had a huge advantage and we got to be in the 16th Street Atlantic Stage 2 space. And we don't have to do that. That's our theater and our, that's the only show in that space. And so that was a huge bonus. And so, and even with a very, very small budget, and I mean tiny, we were, you know, we thought, okay, how can we lean into that and use this as an opportunity and make it feel expensive, even though, you know, we're very limited in what we can do. And Mylar goes a long way. It catches light. It changes color depending on the light. And what was really cool too is by just closing that Mylar curtain and opening it, you know, 1 minute we're in Oz and the next minute we're in Chicago, and it was like immediate. And so, and then there, like every, like most spaces in New York City, we have these giant columns in our way. And so instead of, you know, feeling limited by them, we thought, oh, how can we use them to our advantage? And so Alejandro Fajardo, our brilliant lighting designer, and Rodrigo, they put ginormous lights on them because the whole container of Oz is that concert. And so, you know, really making that feel, you know, expensive. And then we couldn't use haze. And so we have these fluorescent neon tubes that Atlantic happened to have in stock. And we thought, okay, how can we make a tornado without haze and, you know, no fancy gadgets? And so that really helped. And then everything's on wheels in our show. So we just spun everything in a circle. So yeah, it was really fun. It really brought me back to my roots of, you know, starting in theater and, you know, you have like $2 and a dream and you, you know, that I tell my students, you know, you're not going to be given a big budget unless you know how to work with nothing. And so, yeah. And so, the best part is, in that theater, there's this giant garage door and I was like, can I use it? Cause it's there. Yeah. And they said, sure. And so that was a really fun reveal for the behind the curtain when the wizard is exposed as a fraud, and and it was really satisfying because, you know, it's a big surprise and, you know, it's been there the whole show and people, and then it lifts and it's very funny. So, yeah, I'm really, really lucky that, you know, that the whole show is really, because those actors don't have to set up the set every day. So it was great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, love this. I also love that Dora had like nods also to like the Barbie movie, because the pink gingham is the like prime, which is like pop culture everything right now, the prime part of her dress that she's trying to find her body within, with like little fringes of the blue, which I love. Like there's so many cool visuals that just, I don't know, with like 2023 into 2024, I felt so like in this time, in this production, like just, you know, like the scenery that I was seeing outside of the theater, like you were talking about, I was seeing in this piece, which was so, so cool. So Melissa, I have a couple questions for you, and I was going to kick a couple of questions to you, Soto. So, okay. Can you share your favorite aspects about this interpretation that is unique to El Otro Oz? And also if there's a specific character that you just feel the most connected to.
Yeah. This production, I have so many favorite things, but I love, cause in the script, each character is from a different country. Like the Iron Chef is from the Dominican Republic, and then the Scarecrow's from Puerto Rico, and Dora and her mom are from Mexico, and I'm super mixed, and my dad is Dominican, my mom is Chilean and Puerto Rican, and I was born in Connecticut. You know, it as a very mixed, you know, Latina in the US, it's tricky sometimes, but I also love it. And so I loved being able to lean into all the different sides of myself, and our cast is super diverse. I think everyone is from like a different country, like Ariel, who plays the mom and the wizard. She's Cuban and Argentinian, you know, and Adriel, who plays the Scarecrow, he's from Puerto Rico. And so, it was just really fun in the room having such a diverse cast, but we all bonded through the show and through our different cultures. It was just really special. My favorite character is Dora, because I really relate to her. I've struggled with Spanish my whole life. And I love that, you know, she's like, I don't do well in Spanish. She says her Spanish is busted. It is busted. And that he's struggling with language and she's struggling with language. And then they bond over that and they feel seen. And that they accept each other and there's no judgment. You know, I really love that. And I think it's super powerful. There's actually on opening day, there was a mom and her son who came to our show. And I saw them before the show, and the mom was speaking to her son in Spanish and he was answering in English, which is very popular. That's me as well. And so, he was like 6 or something. And after the show, she looked at him and she goes, "Do you want to speak Spanish now?" And he goes, "Yeah." Cause apparently he had refused. And I almost like lost it. Cause I'm like, oh wow, our show has the power to do so much more than just entertain. And that little kid felt seen, you know, and it was really, really special. So.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. There's so many beautifully unique aspects of this production that just really like struck my heart. Even like the Tin Man's interpretation as this Iron Chef, like just wanting to be able to cook from the heart, like that did something to me. I was just like, what a beautiful intention, and just wanting to, like, what does that even mean? Like to be able to eat something and you feel like it's been cooked from the heart. Like that just had me. And the shoes too. Can you talk a little bit about what makes the shoes unique to Dora connecting to her culture? Cause it's so cool.
Yeah. So, it's hilarious because in this story, Dora doesn't feel the rhythm.
It's okay, girl.
I know. And, you know, because it's such a cliche, you know, like, oh, if you're a Latino, you know how to salsa and you like spicy food and, you know, girl can't dance. And it's really, really funny. And then the shoes give her the power and the ability to suddenly be an amazing dancer. And, yeah. And Nia, she does it. She physicalizes it so well. Once you put those shoes on, she does this thing with her body where it looks like she's not in control of her body. And Alessandra's choreography is very, very complex. And so it's just great the way that it all came together. And the way that they reinterpreted the shoes for this particular, you know, version of the story was really smart.
Oh, I love it. Another aspect I would love to touch with you on is the magic mirror that the La Brúa del Oeste uses, which makes me think she's a little bit more of a good witch than a bad witch, because the gift that magic mirror gives to Dora is so extraordinary in that usual scene, which is usually just the witch yelling at the Dorothy character. There's this whole like awakening moment that Dora has when she's trapped in the castle. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So because La Brúa del Oeste is trying to get the shoes back, she kidnaps Dora and she's like, give me the shoes. And she can't get the shoes unless Dora takes them off herself, because the shoes are magic and she can't touch them. And she basically uses her tension with her mom against her. So the whole premise is it's her 15th birthday and her mom is so excited to give her a quinceañera. And she just wants to be like all the other kids in school, and she wants a sweet 16, which is so common. And the first day of rehearsal, I had everybody talk about their connection to Oz and if they had a quince or not. And so she says that her mom is embarrassing her and that she's, you know, they're not in Mexico. Why does she need a quince? And she doesn't understand the value of what her mom is trying to give her, which is culture, tradition. She's passing a legacy down to her daughter, and you know, it's very loaded, and she doesn't get it. And it's not her fault that she doesn't get it. But you know, she's being a brat. And so the witch uses that against her and says, you think your mom is an embarrassment and you don't know how hard she's worked and fought for you to like come to this country and give you a better life. And it's really powerful. And the mom appears through the mirror, and then she sings about her journey to this country. And you know, you learn that their dad died before she was born. And, you know, it's a lot. My mom came to opening and she was crying. And a lot of the adults who come to the show, they're shocked by how, you know, they're affected, and they cry. and we cried in rehearsal because it you know, all of us Latinos in some way or not have some kind of immigration story. If it's not us, it's our parents or our grandparents. And whether or not we know that journey, because some of those journeys are very painful. And they're not shared or a lot of us don't speak Spanish because the parents just wanted us to be accepted and fit in and not struggle like they did, which is what, you know, my grandma did with me. And when she came here from Chile, she became a citizen, and she was like, we're not speaking Spanish. And so it's a very common story. And so, and I think no matter, even if you're not from the Latinx community, you can relate to it in terms of, because we're all in this big melting pot of the US, you know. So it's a very universal story. It's very powerful in a TYA show.
I know. Wow. Bless TYA. Like, I truly think some of these shows hit me more than like something that's playing on Broadway sometimes, mm-hmm. just because there is such heart rooted in this. I that this really, really touched me, this whole part of the journey, because it never goes this far, like we were saying before, like in this moment in the castle. And something in the New York Times article, which was so beautifully written about this piece, and I couldn't agree with everything that they said more about El Otras. They noted something that I like was like, whoa, like for many immigrants, a journey is a one way only and home remains really far away. So you have to keep that home alive and carry the spirit into whatever new world you're going into for your children, for yourself. That is beyond deep. Like, like that, my gosh, like that just sends shivers up my body. So thank you so much for talking more to that magic mirror concept and just what it means to Dorothy's no place like her ancestral home part of this.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked, because I don't know if folks realize how deep it really goes.
Yeah. You have to like sit with it. Like I had moments where I was really thinking and being like, oh my gosh, to make that journey, the mother especially, to come all by herself while being pregnant, like I'm tired without being pregnant. Like I can't even imagine making a journey like that. So it just really puts things into humanity perspective, which is just so, so amazing.
Thanks. Yeah. And Jaime and Mando, the composers, and Tommy, they musically do a phenomenal job of also telling that story through the music. Like they really paint the picture of Mexico and the journey with the instrumentation of, you know, you're hearing the accordion and the ranchera, and, you know, it's really stunning. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it and remembering us rehearsing, right, Soto? Like when we,
It's musically, it's one of the most spectacular moments in the show for me. I just really love it. It has such a sweep to it. And lyrically, they talk about it, like, and we can never go back. Like, that always kills me. They're like, wait, but this is what we're doing now. Like, and I'm making this journey for you. Melissa, you touched on it too, how in that one little moment, they talk about the whole, there's so much they don't tell us about that part of the chapter, right? I was born in New York and grew up in Florida. My dad never spoke about when he came from Puerto Rico at 13. And when we were staging that scene, I was just like, when she's like, you never told me. And I was like, me at 41, there's things about my father's journey that I don't know still. He's no longer with us. And my mother's no longer with us. So I'll never know. And they kept it from me for whatever reasons. It's part of the journey. And the fact that they were able to lyrically and poetically capture that in that one moment, that just that this little icicle of something that we all go through some version of, it's very, very special.
Wow.
Wow. Thank you both for sharing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just personal elements of your own stories. I mean, it's just beautiful, beautiful to hear from you. So thank you. Soto, could you dive a little further into the musical elements of the score and maybe describe it for us and any other favorite moments musically you have in the show?
Listen, let me be gentle about it, because I could be here all day talking about this music. The songs are exquisite. The songs are really, really just exquisite. And the orchestration, what they gave us to work with, is really so exciting and interesting and fresh and powerful. Much in the same way that all the characters represent different Latin cultures, that extends deeply into the score as well. And so apart from just the Latin cultures, there's pop music elements, there's obviously the musical theater elements. And there's certain aspects about the music that encourage you and incite emotion from you, right? I think there's so many, like everything. I had a new favorite song every other day, but, it's towards the end, right before she clicks her heels, when she's like, it's the sound of a bolero, y bailar with Uncle Chelo, escuchando a mi mami canta, pa, 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 es mi yoga. And the horns come back in, pa, pa, da, pa, 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 pa. Ah, come on. That's what you want, right? That's what you want. And it does. And the thing is, that's one moment that I can scoop right off the top of my head That moment happens so many times in this show. And mm-hmm. and it's 1 hour, and it's a thick hour. Like, we worked hard on that music because it's a lot of material, and they're playing 34 people. And so it's like we have so much material. And then once we decided, you know, I'm a big fan of, and Melissa really supported me on that. If we're going to make a thing, it's got to be a thing the whole time. So like we got, so every single character they're playing for every different piece of music has a different vocal identity, and making sure we maintain that, and then not prioritizing character over tone, because you got to sing right. It's got to sound good too. And I just, I'm so proud of them because they really crushed that. And we were tough on them about that. And they did such a great job. But it's so important to the story that like Dora is meeting vocally identifiably different individuals throughout this thing. As the music changes, you're meeting a different person. You're meeting a different culture. You're meeting a different style. It's very, very exciting stuff. Again, I could talk all night. morning about this.
I love it. I haven't seen it yet. I'm so excited. And the more I talk to you, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait. So I hope my question makes sense, but how does the bilingual aspect kind of play into the music? Like, what is the journey there?
So that's very, very cool. It's interesting because this getting the scansion of the Spanish onto the melodies is its own thing, and the composers have a way that they want the material out. And then it was funny, we encountered it a lot with the Scarecrow character, with Adiel being a native speaker. He's like, yeah, but like it feels more natural to say it like this. And I was like, cool, dig that, love that, embrace, respect the melodies, this, right? Like, and it's this, and that's how. And I was like I understand. From a spoken standpoint, that makes more sense to you. But when you sing it like this in the audience, I understand what's happening. And it gets the information out to me in a different way. They were so smart with how it was put together. Also, I grew up around Spanish, but I, similar to Chelo, like I get nervous when I have to answer in Spanish. Like it's a thing that I'm still working on as an adult.
Yeah, me too.
And but I'm so... I've been around it my whole life. I really didn't clock until opening how much Spanish is in the show and how they've done such a great job about like, they'll give you enough information. You know, the Oz story, you have enough. We never say Ruby Slippers. It's always Zapatillas de Ruby, right? Like we never say Ruby You're Slippers, right. But it's clear. We understand, we get it. But then La Bruja sings Powerless. And the first half, she sings Powerless. And then the second half is Sin Poder. So, like, it stays very clear the whole time. And the writing was really there for us in that moment. And how it the information gets delivered to the audience. But it was, like, figuring out how to pull the instinct to speak naturally with what the composers need to get the information across was its own journey for us. It's really cool, though, to see it come together.
Did you count all the characters, Soto?
I didn't, no.
I was going to say, is it 34?
34 is my go-to like number. I feel like, yeah, we all pick our numbers. I remember my mother's was 42. She's like, I told you 42 times. That was her favorite thing.
Oh, God, that is so true. Mine's always 34. I say a million. Like, I just take it up.
100.
Just a random number.
It's 34, I know.
You said it very confidently. I believed it.
It's like, all about vibe, right? As long as you give it with swag, like it sells, right?
34.
Oh, I was like, oh, they played 34. I was like, with you.
Like, now I'm gonna go back and be like counting.
34 characters at 10 a.m. That's another like testament to these actors who are doing the show. Double show days. Brilliant work.
MK, it's hard to get out of bed in the morning, but you know what helps?
Coffee.
Yes, and lighting a candle.
Ooh, yes, a favorite ritual of mine as well. What's your current scent?
Well, I love to theme my scents to the season or to my interests, and I'm so grateful to have found Jolie Creates, who is a niche-themed candle maker with a side of spirituality.
Sounds like our people. But when you say interests, Tare, do you mean Oz?
Yes. And I have fallen in love with Jolie's Flying Free candle, which is a love letter to Green Girly's nostrils that has made me feel like I am one with nature. The blend is perfection.
Ooh, yes. But what if you are feeling more bubble gown than black frock?
Well, Em, good news. Jolie has a pink popular candle, which makes me want Glinda to open a candy shop. You can honor both your good witch and your wicked one.
Love this, Tare. Where can I purchase?
Jolie Creates is on the social spheres, TikTok and Instagram, and feel free to hit her up there, both linked in show notes below.
Happy candle shopping.
Okay, we kind of touched on this a little bit about audience response to this piece, but are there any other favorite responses you've had just from watching children in the audience, or how do you think the little version of yourself would have reacted to seeing the show?
Oh man. Oh, yeah. This is the kind of thing, if little Melissa had this show, I don't know what would have happened. Yeah. This is the type of thing that we needed as kids, for sure.
Absolutely.
Especially like little Soto, little Melissa, like struggling with Spanish and feeling judged constantly. Like you're not enough. The way that things cycle through, because now it's, you know, in. But then you have, you know, a president like 45 who's vilifying us. And so now there's more pride in speaking Spanish. But you know what? Like I still own it. That's why I love directing shows like this, because I feel like it's an opportunity to practice, to learn and you know, clarify that story. And I feel a lot of pride, you know. I was really touched that my mom, you know, was so affected by it, and she's going again. One of my cousins came on opening, and she is 15, and I didn't know that she wanted a 15 and is getting a sweet 16. So it was the opposite. And our family was like, you want a 15? Cause I didn't have a 15. And it's not really in our traditions, and because her friends in school are very fluent and she's not, it's, you know, and she wanted to be like them, and you know, it's just like, it's just so wild to me. And it was her first show and she loved it, and I didn't realize she was very stressed with all the testing at school, and she didn't want to come because she was like, I need to study. And her mom was like, no, we bought you a ticket. You said you were going. You got to go. And she was so happy. And she's very quiet. And she was asking me a lot of questions at the party on opening. And it was just really cool to see her come out of her shell. And so, yeah, the show is really working. It's working a lot of angles for little kids, for big kids, for adults. It's been really great. It's the gift that keeps on giving. So,
oh, for sure. I loved the audience reaction to when Danny sings, when he gets his gift at the end, his roar.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. Like
that's we the always, lion.
Yeah. We always love that part. Danny does an amazing job with it. He sounds beautiful. His voice is incredible.
His voice is incredible.
It's incredible. Yeah. He's spectacular. And so we're doing that part, and that's one of those things we always knew it was good. Like we're like, sounds great. Love, love, love. But hearing the kids cheer on opening for that moment that the lion has his roar and he's belting, I was like, yes, theater, baby, love, magic. So good.
5-year-old going, yes.
Oh my God. And to speak to what you were asking earlier, like if Baby Soto saw this, all right, so I got my love of musicals from my mother. She loved musical theater so much. It was my first one was the Oliver movie on HBO. I was like, what is this? This little boy is singing. This is so cool. I was like 8 years old. And then she pulled out all her records and she taught me all into it. So the first live musical I saw, there was this rep company that was, they would come to your town and they would do Sound of Music. And then the next night they would do The King and I, which to think about is
what
hilarious.
What a service. Not,
wow.
Seeing those shows, hearing all that music, it was wonderful. Not enough Asian people to pull King and I off, right? And it's the 90s, and that's how we were doing it back then. And like, I didn't even think about that till later, that I'm watching this piece and there's not any sort of cultural representation. It wasn't even part of the conversation, right? So if Baby Soto saw this show and saw this story, embracing all these different aspects of Latin culture given to you by a Latin team, I mean, that's how, what kind of, if I'd known then that embracing was the move, and I mean, I'm a man of a certain age. I remember in 2001 when all of a sudden Ricky Martin and Jennifer Lopez, and it's cool to be Latino all of a sudden, right? Like, I remember that shift. I saw that shift happen. If Baby Me saw that before, it would have been a different ballgame. But, you know, it gets to you when it gets to you. I'm happy it got to us now, and that we're able to share this with this next generation, that they don't have to see that crazy King and I that I saw. You know, like,
no crazy King,
which is beautifully sung. They did a fabulous job. But, like, no.
Ricky Martin is the first person I saw in concert, and it was one of the best nights of my life.
Whoa.
I think I was like 11. It was so good.
Oh.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for
that's a good first concert.
Yeah, that's a good
one, one of the only two until like Dave Matthews. Just I don't really do
that. Oh, wow.
So it's like Ricky and Dave are really the winners.
Ricky and Dave.
He changed the game. And back when he was in Menudo, there's in some photo album, there's a picture of my brother playing in a pool with him because some family trip to Puerto Rico.
What?
Menudo was at the hotel we were at. And there's a picture of my brother Paulie in the pool with baby Ricky Martin. It's one of my family's claim to fame that they crossed paths. I mean, they showed me when I was 12. I was like, who's this? And then Ricky Martin becomes... I was like, oh, it's Ricky Martin. Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I got to find that picture.
I was obsessed with him as Marius in Les Miserables because he did that for a brief stint.
Come on.
Yeah.
Legendary.
He was like a Broadway baby for a second, and then like he blew up.
I forgot about that. Oh, my
God. It's wild. He was like the Ariana Grande of his time. Like one little Broadway show, and then like
one.
Oh, he's still huge. He did the Evita revival too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Wow, we should really explore Ricky Martin more on this podcast.
I know. I think
he's giving the world lots of gifts.
I know what I'm doing today. Oh my gosh, I've loved this conversation. But before we say click our heels, tres veces, and say goodbye, how is There's No Place Like Home resonating with you both today? And to kind of rephrase that, how do you carry your home on the inside, or however you want to interpret that for you today?
I am an extrovert, and I really get my energy from other people. And I have to say home is where my mom is. And if she's not available or around, it's, you know, my friends and chosen family and other family members too. But my mom is my favorite family member, and I can say that. But also a lot of my friends who, you know, have given me a lot of love and support. Yeah. Whenever I need to feel like home, I just reach out to those I love and who love me. So, yeah.
Gorgeous.
I told you a little bit about that. I went on the road, and, It was a weird time because I got married on Wednesday. My mom passed away 2 weeks later, and then I went on the road 2 weeks later.
Wow!
And I probably should have taken a break, but I had to work, right? So I was on the road for a year and a half, and then you know, work begets work, and it's great, and then you have I was able to work at a Gungwa Playhouse after the tour closed, and they gave me two shows in a row, which was a wonderful gift. And I'm so thankful, Melissa. I had a conflict with closing one show in our rehearsal. She's like, it's fine. We'll start you the next day. Come in. She was so good with me about that. And so I got to do it. But I had been feeling so deeply personally that I'd been kind of was working, but it was a bit of running away, right? Like I had such an insane coming out of COVID to experience that. And then I'm just out on the road and I love being on the road. It's a fabulous life. I had a wonderful time. But I was so on my own path being like figuring out what that was. And like, I'd be like, I have to come home. I have to do this. But this piece really spoke to me. And so I'm going to do this one show before I take a break. And so the timing of this show and me literally coming home and literally going through a process of acclimating to my apartment, living with my husband, spending more than 3 weeks with him, you know, it's so special. And then to be while I'm in that moment, in that space, and I'm, I don't know if you can tell, I'm aggressively sensitive. So everything means the world to me. Being in that space and then having this family to come to where we're exploring somebody's connection to their culture and their relationship with their mother. And it was just the fact that I got to experience both of those at the same time, at a time when I had the emotional availability to really be present to it. I consider myself very, very blessed to have that. So that's my whole there's no place like home moment. I literally got to come to my actual home while experiencing this story. It's very, very special to me.
Aww. Wow. That's so nice. Actually, you know what? Beautiful. To give a better answer, because yours was great. I was living in Syracuse for the last year and a half, and this show magically I moved back the week we had auditions for this show.
Oh, yeah.
So it was literally coming home. This is the first show I got to do as a New Yorker again, and that was everything. So yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
So you and I were kind of,
listen, we were here, we were having the vibe.
We were. And now Soto's my chosen family too. So, yeah, you know, I found, you know, more homebodies, more homies.
Many more collaborations between the two of you down on your Yellow Brick Road.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
This has been so soul filling and just beautiful to listen to. And the whole reason why I think this story needs to keep getting reinterpreted, needs to keep happening, because finding ourselves is not easy. Owning all parts of who we are, not easy work. And these shows really do, I think, show you it's possible. And what is happening at the Atlantic Theater, stage two, is pretty special. So everyone run there. You have one last weekend to catch it.
Run there.
Catch a plane. Yep. If you're
extended.
You extend it.
Breaking news.
Till when?
Oh my gosh.
That's amazing. That's exciting.
Congrats. That's very exciting. Oh my gosh.
So everyone, you have time. That means plane tickets time now. Can be bought.
That's a word.
Get those points for your credit card. Get to New York City and come see El Otro Oz. Thank you so much, Soto and Melissa. We really, enjoyed our time with you.
Thank you for having us. It was fun.
Yes, yeah.
Big fans.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to Down the Yellow Brick Pod. We love linking arms with listeners like you.
Another special thank you to our Patreon Pod Squad members who have become our Bolina soup for the soul. Do you get it? And Oz family all across the globe. Consider joining us for as low as $3 a month. Patreon linked in show notes. More tiers and perks coming soon.
You can also find us over on IG at Down the Yellow Brick Pod. And someday, TikTok, and dropping Good Trouble Witch merch like it's hot on our Etsy shop. All links below. Shout out to our logo designer, Maddie Frank, for helping us make Oz Nerddom fashion. See you over the rainbow soon.
In a clock tick.